Well may we say God save the Queen, because nothing will save the Governor General.
You know I've searched my heart to prove there's better ways to push and pull. Hey, whatever gets you through these days.
Hello and welcome to Well May We Say, a progressive podcast about Australian politics. This is episode 49 for Friday, 23rd of February 2018. I'm Jeremy Sear, and each week I'll be joined by a different guest host to help me look into what's happening to our country and why, what's going to happen, and what we can do about it. Tonight's guest host is Ginger. Welcome back, Ginger. Back again.
Hello, thank you for having me once more.
Thank you for your return. We're going to do shorter, punchier episodes now because I'm editing them and I'm nowhere near as good at editing them as Daniel was. Mm. And also, I feel like maybe if we do them shorter and punchier, we can get them out more often.
That's a strong prospect.
So we don't need to talk about Barnaby. I ranted about Barnaby for like 15 minutes. And it hasn't gone anywhere.
No, the story is just going around and around in circles. So, yeah, he's not going anywhere. He will probably still be in whatever chair he's been occupying for however long, come the end of the next election. So, what more needs to be said?
Because I guess from one side of politics, an entitled, born-to-rule attitude, which is what Barnaby's been displaying, is entirely consistent with their general philosophy of, screw the rest of you, yeah. I've got mine, I got this, so... So imagine the voters who like that stuff aren't really that deterred by it.
I don't think so. I think it's probably a bit of a stretch to compare him to someone like Trump, but there is a sort of sense now, like, what could possibly bring him down? Like, all of these things that in any other case, like corruption, you know, sex scandals, all of these things that might have brought down lesser, more honest or more civically minded politicians, Barnaby just continues to look down the barrel of the camera and go, yeah, so?
Well, I mean, we live in a world not just with Trump's. Berlusconi's coming back.
Yes, reanimated corpse of.
It's almost like people have been trained to expect so little of politicians. And the Turnbull government's done a very good job of making us think this is a sex scandal rather than a dodgy misuse of funds scandal.
Yeah, this is a corruption thing that has a sexy veneer.
Not so much just the fun stuff. The stuff like taking money from... Oh, sorry, not money. Taking rental accommodation from a mate who clearly... has interests that his department, Barnaby's, you know...
That fall within Barnaby's remit. He has conveniently offered him 6 months of free rent, which is, I'm sure Armidale rent is comparatively cheap to, say, Melbourne rent, but something was like $440 a week was being spent, is what this property is worth.
Maybe the voters of New England who are happy with Barnaby were perfectly happy already with him getting all these completely unearned bonuses for Armidale at the expense of the rest of us. Mm. And maybe the fact that he was also getting unearned bonuses for himself at the same time doesn't bother them so much. They're like, yeah, it's all right. We're still getting ours. So,
yeah, that's right. You know. Put all the pork barrels rolling in. They're happy with that. Yeah.
And he's got his seat now. He's in until the next full election.
Yeah.
They can't. And if they turfed him, what? He'd just be sitting there as an independent, extracting even more from them?
Yeah, yeah. If they kick him out of the Nationals, he'll just stay in the seat, put on a different lapel pin and keep rolling on. He's not going anywhere.
The same hat. The hat is not just the Nationals. That's him. He can wear that bloody hat out wherever he
is. Yeah, that's right. That's why I specified a lapel pin as opposed to the hat, because there's nothing changing that. Not on him.
Well, I suppose his old opponent, Tony Windsor, used to be... He was a Nat briefly and then ran as an independent. Mm-hmm. So it's not like New England objects to people who were Nats and then abandoned the Nats.
No. I think generally most Western politics, people will vote for a name anyway. They're like, I know that name. No matter when, I don't care if it's Nats or independent written next to it. It'll come out the same in the wash, so as long as we get ours.
So I don't know how you persuade the voters of New England who were already on the Barnaby train a few months ago, that, I mean, are they losing out in the sense that he may not be deputy PM and therefore they lose? But, I mean, you know, most of us have local members who are not deputy PM and they still stay. So I guess the voters of New England will only care if he stops getting them special stuff at the expense of the rest of us.
Yeah, if he stops delivering, which I assume is what he's doing to earn the re-election after re-election, so...
So really what we should be doing is punishing the parties who work with them, who are, like all of us who don't live in New England should be like, I'm not going to vote for a party that takes stuff and gives them quite dodgily to New England at the expense of where I live, I'm not going to vote. You know, it's not Barnaby so much. It's more all of the other LNP politicians who were happy to give Barnaby that stuff at the expense of their own electorates. So don't vote for them.
Yeah, that's a simple solution.
In all of the other electorates, don't vote for the bastards.
Yeah, like I think in general, I think a good rule of thumb is don't vote Liberal National Party, like just generally speaking.
I suspect that the people who are voting for the Liberals are doing so for nothing more than the... I think they'll tax me less and I'm a rich bastard.
Or I think they'll tax me less when I am also rich.
The
aspirational class.
That is so bonkers. So, all right, well, to hell with Barnaby and to hell with how it impacts on Malcolm, who is looking more ridiculous. I thought his peak ridiculousness wasn't the bit where he was calling, where he and Barnaby had a back and forth.
Dueling press conferences.
It was more the bit where he was like,
"No, I shall call another press conference." That press conference was even more incompetent than mine was.
Why did he not just shut up? Anyway, the bit where he was trying to define what a partner was in a way that anybody who's been, you know, I object to the fact that Centrelink determine as soon as a poor person has sex with somebody else, Centrelink goes, "Oh, good. Well, you're being supported by them. We'll cut you both off."
Sharing the same address, apparently that makes them partners. So it's a pretty low threshold for Centrelink, but a much higher bar for a parliamentarian to have to get over.
And weirdly enough, when you do share a house with somebody, or even if you're early in a relationship with somebody, they don't actually necessarily give you money. No. It's not actually that they're financially supporting you. And when Centrelink cuts you off, that really... Basically what it says to poor people is you can't have a relationship with anybody.
Yeah, well, there's no middle ground. You are either in a relationship where you're all sharing money... or you are single, and that is the shades of grey that are allowed, is all two of them.
As far as Centrelink is concerned, you may only have sex with somebody if they are giving you money.
Otherwise,
we'll starve you.
Ponder that. Yeah, yeah. It's not wrong. It's not wrong.
That's
It does remind me of another industry.
So... The fact that the Prime Minister's like, no, he couldn't possibly have this. Vicky couldn't possibly be his partner. I didn't realise Vicky was a former Daily Telegraph journo.
I didn't know that either.
So
good Lord.
The people launching into her were her old colleagues.
So they've probably got her on Facebook. They've got all of the information at the ready.
And as that dickhead Hildebrand said, like she would have been able to see all this coming from a mile off. She knew what we were going to be doing. But yeah, the idea that he's like, she couldn't possibly be his partner. Because he was married at the time. It's not good enough for fucking Centrelink, mate. Like, we're not going to be... It's just such a bonkers line to be running.
It's a convenient argument. It's just him playing dumb to the prospect of anyone having a relationship when he's married. Like, he's married to this one person. How could he possibly have any contact, romantic, physical or sexual, with another person?
I'm completely forgetting what the rule is in place for. Why is it that you can't have partners employed by you? Because it's preferment and it's corrupt and it's problematic in terms of stuff, like for all those reasons. Well, the same thing applies if she's a mistress. If you're in a relationship of any kind, the same rule, the same problems apply. The problem isn't because the government hasn't put those rules in place because of some particular rule about whether somebody's got a ring on their finger. It's about whether they're in a relationship with that person and whether that's problematic then for the rest of the staff. So it's just a weird line. And then for the government, and you had Morrison on Insiders and Things talking, saying, the difference between this and other sex standards is just about, it's purely about what's appropriate in the modern workplace. You're like, well, why has it taken you this long to figure it out? And Bernardi's out there saying, well, there's another relationship in there that you don't know about yet. But it's pretty hard on those people who were in relationships and worked together because it was previously okay. And they now have changed the rules on them. So there must be some relationships out there that are now in a real pickle.
Having some tough conversations. I'm just flabbergasted there wasn't an existing... Like, it doesn't have to be a rule necessarily, but some sort of... entrenched practice around dealing with a partner. Like, nepotism in general is surely something that they've encountered more than once. It's politics. Nepotism is everywhere. And of course, being in a relationship is a slightly more extreme form of nepotism. There are more complicated factors there. But like, if JB Hi-Fi, who do not have a great history on sexual relationships with staff members, if they have a policy about how store manager can't be dating a staff member and they need to be transferred, and there are policies around that and transfer processes and such, How is it that JB Hi-Fi of all groups got to that point before the government did?
So these sort of things started coming in 20 years ago. Like, how is the government the last?
It's not a new idea. It's always been more or less inappropriate. We've always, like, it's not like we needed an update to say, oh, by the way, this is now wrong. We've always known that, you know, someone in power could potentially mistreat someone if they were dating them, or give them preferential treatment over other people. It can complicate matters in an unhelpful way. It's unprofessional at the very least.
I suppose what we've got now is Barnaby's had his trial by fire. He's been forged in a crucible of a couple of weeks of embarrassment, and now he is untouchable and will be. His supporters were referring to him as a political terminator.
Oh my lord! What a narrative.
He can't be destroyed, his arm would be coming out and grabbing them or something. Like, they made some remark about how, you know, after you think you've destroyed him, he's coming back. And I'm like, yeah, also he doesn't show pity or remorse, and he absolutely will not stop.
Yeah.
And he doesn't show human empathy, and if he gets his way, would destroy vast swathes of humanity.
All right. The only thing stopping me accepting him as a Terminator is that photo of him from behind where he's wearing a long sleeve shirt tucked into shorts. Standing next to a car and just the bare, awkward legs of a middle-aged, like, white man who does not see the sun.
It's a very effective disguise.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that was the whole issue with the Terminator franchise in general, was that they were going for, you know, extravagant, large, like, muscular, beautiful people who could, you know, be obviously picked out of a crowd where...
Which kind of undermines the whole point of disguising them as humans.
Exactly. So, you know, go for the Barnaby model, you know, the beetrooter, as they've coined him. No one would have ever picked him as this, you know, killing machine from the future.
Unless it's in the T-1000, which does disguise itself as various ordinary people, like the prison guard and things. People.
Oh, that's right.
But, well, that's... I mean, I think Cameron originally intended somebody, like the Terminator, to be more like the Robert Patrick Terminator originally, and then he decided to go with the Arnie. Like, it was just a different angle.
Mm.
But yeah, I think originally the idea was that the Terminator would be a sneakier, less Arnie sort of person.
A bit more discreet than a 6.5 foot tall Austrian bodybuilder.
Yeah, he's not a very good disguise. He's
not a spy, no.
No. All right. So that is some of the monstrousness. Anyway, that's what we're not going to talk about, and we've just wasted almost 10 minutes.
We're not going to talk about that.
We are going to cover, and I want to cover these very quickly, I want to actually cover them, you know, and give them
appropriate time.
So we've got... the fact that they're trying to expand this hideous debit card, we've got the Alberici thing with the where she called bullshit on
the company tax cuts,
and fundamentally, and I'll say it right now, so it's at the top, so that everybody hears this point, because what the government had a whinge about her piece on the basis that she was saying, oh, these companies don't pay tax, like was it like one in five,
I think it was, yeah.
Of the top 50 companies, the biggest 50 companies in Australia don't pay any tax, and the government's like, ha-ha. You don't understand, they don't pay tax because they don't have profits. Like, we don't understand that they manufacture losses. Like, that's why they employ these accountants.
That's
so
it.
To move money around so it looks like a loss. But clearly they're not loss-making enterprises in general, or their share price wouldn't be going up. People aren't investing in loss-making enterprises.
If they were not making money, there would not be local branches of, you know, Apple and various other places. If they were losing money here, they would shut down and move away. Finally, they continue to expand and... You know, in the case of Apple, as a prime example, are building a lovely and expensive place on Federation Square, which does not speak to a revenue problem.
Yeah. So it's the government's line that, like, we don't understand. We're just too stupid to grasp. And Emma Alberici is too stupid because you don't understand that, well, you only pay tax on profits.
Yeah, that mere, like, university graduate in economics has been covering economics...
25 years.
25 yeah. years. Like, she definitely doesn't understand.
So this was Turnbull on Wednesday the 14th in question time. So he answered to Dorothy Dix. I mean, Parliament needs to get rid of Dix. Is there just a total waste? This is a question from the member for Forrest. My question is to the Prime Minister. Will the and look? I'm being a little unfair on her because they all do this, and both parties do this. This is the, you know, the party writes a question for a backbencher to ask, and they are nauseating.
It's a my soft, question softball question.
Like just embarrassingly contorted to be like the prime minister wants to say this. Ask a question.
Yeah, how do we frame it?
My question is to the Prime Minister, will the Prime Minister update the House on how small and family-owned businesses are taking advantage of lower taxes to create jobs and increase investment, including in my electorate of Forest? Is the Prime Minister aware of any alternative approaches?
I know that I swear everything I bring back to The Simpsons, but this is Lisa being forced to ask Mr. Burns, like, your campaign has the momentum of a runaway freight train.
Why are you so popular?
Why are you so popular? That's exactly all this is. To call it a softball question implies that the ball is being thrown at all. It's T-ball. This is a T-ball question.
Well, he gave her the ball and she walked it over to him.
Put it on the tee.
That's right. Yeah, no, what it is his whip gave her the question, She handed the ball to the whip in like a soft cushion that like little flower.
Yes.
Expensive
with
weddings,
tassels. Yep.
The flower children bring to the groom or something. Like that. And and the little ball comes up to Malcolm on that like velvet cushion and he's handed to him gently.
And he taps it with a croquet mallet through the hoop.
his rant. We have introduced, and no thanks to the Labor Party, passed through the Parliament some of the toughest multinational tax avoidance laws in the world. Okay, I call bullshit on that. Anyway,
yep. One in five.
then he gets stuck into the that's why the multinational companies are so tough on the Liberals and don't donate to them anymore because of their toughest multinational tax avoidance laws in the world.
That's also definitely where they don't have any money is all those donations. They've all dried up for sure.
He's talking about, and then he gets into the article. So Emma had written a piece basically saying, look. A lot of these companies aren't paying tax. So before there is no basis for us to be saying we should be lowering the company tax rate when so many of the big companies aren't paying it anyway. And also it doesn't take into account things like franking. So if you're comparing like with like, you're just the company tax rate. It's not a reasonable comparison because companies are also looking at other factors about a country. And also in terms of pure tax, we have franking and we have systems in place which change the tax impact on companies apart from that underpin the tax rate anyway. So there's all these other things. You're not actually comparing like with like, and what she compared with, and this is the killer example, which is not in the version. So she had two stories. One was a news article, which the ABC then amended, and the other was the analysis article, which the ABC removed, citing that it didn't stand up to their editorial standards, but with no explanation of what errors there were, just that apparently it was not balanced enough. As in, when she pointed out that there was no justification whatsoever for these tax cuts, she didn't find some way of saying, but maybe there is.
But also, Labor were bad.
It's just mad. And if that is the ABC editorial standard, then it's a fucking stupid standard. It's like, you know, if you're writing an article about, I don't know, the killing fields, you're like, you know, they're terrible and people will be murdered. But on the other hand, it has reduced impact on public transport. Why do you have... That is just insane. Anyway, but before the ABC took it down, Malcolm did this in Question Time. We saw that they, as in the opposition, were busily retweeting the article, one of the most confused and poorly researched articles I've seen on this topic on the ABC's website. Of course, the ABC is an enterprise that understands profit and loss. It does! It understands taxes. They're recipients of them. They receive them. Taxpayers' funds. They understand the difference. The hard work of investing and struggling and losing money one year and then being able to offset it against profit the next or not. No, the ABC has the same understanding of the commercial world as does the opposition. So Turnbull and then Fifield and I think one of the other government, like they all wrote to Guthrie, to the ABC board, demanding that the article get taken down. Because the article made this really killer point, which was Canada had higher tax rates than the US, you know, over the periods that they were comparing, and investment went up in Canada. So at a time when the US and Canada both cut their rates, but Canada's remained higher, more went to them anyway. Like investment doesn't just follow the headline corporate tax rate, and it's the government's line that we therefore have to match Ireland and America and whatever doesn't stack up. There's no case. They haven't presented any sensible case other than obviously companies won't come here if our rate isn't lower than America's, but
which in itself reflects a willful disregard for the way that economics and business runs. Like that's them purposely misunderstanding the fact to keep their mates happy. The argument that they're presenting is facile and convenient, but it's definitely not one they believe.
Well, because the bottom line isn't really. I mean, the multinationals, the large companies, aren't really interested in. As long as the corporate tax rate is the same for their competitors and them, then they're fine. They eke off their profit bit in the middle. They don't. The only difference, and as far as multinationals are concerned, they want to sell stuff to in Australia, so they. unless we would had the same tax rate as the Cayman Islands, we can never compete. We can never be the lowest taxing country in the world anyway.
No.
All this is about is transferring more money from the public sector to the private sector.
Yeah.
And that's what the government wants to do, and it's what its allies in the business community want. And it's not about, like, they're just trying to find excuses. There's no reason why. It's like their whole thing about how tax, their whole line, that tax rates will lead to wage growth. No, it won't. Companies just pocket the profits.
Yeah, this trickle-down economics, this is like, that's all this is. This is trickle-down economics, which is ludicrous. There's no evidence that will ever trickle anywhere but horizontally to the people who want to make the money and keep the money. And at best, they invest it in something that makes them more money. But they certainly don't hire more people or pay better wages.
To sell it in the first year, they'll do what some of the big companies did in America. They gave bonuses to some of their employees. So bonuses, because they're not an ongoing cost. They're not actually an increase in wages.
Yeah.
And it was what it works out at is, and so the Republicans and the Conservatives will say, see, look, it resulted in bonuses.
Yeah.
But to a tiny percentage of the American workforce, and it would have been the people who are best off in the first place.
Yeah, that would not have been bonuses applied to the people at the very baseline factory operation sort of roles. This would have been people who run six factories.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people, yeah, who are already receiving sizable incomes got a nice extra buff in there as a PR move. Yeah, and you're right, they'll do the same thing.
Isn't it sad, though, that we don't have an ABC that can even turn around to the government saying, no, if you can't identify any factual errors in the article, we're not deleting it.
Yeah. That is concerning. I think that's a reason that people like myself who do not have, I don't pretend to have a strong grasp of economics. Like, I feel like I need to qualify that in any conversation. But I trust that Emeril Ricci does, and I trust her analysis of that. And it is incredibly dispiriting to know that our government feels that it is entitled to and is apparently capable of turning around to our nationally funded broadcaster and saying, no, we don't like that.
Therefore having them delete it.
And having it taken, yeah, that's right. And that the response is not, no, you need to provide, you know, a good reason to take it down.
Yeah, correct errors.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. As they maybe did with the amended version.
Well, no, the amended version just tried to give, like, you know, when they're talking about airlines paying no tax, it was like, well, and they added stuff about it being a highly competitive industry where there's, like, it's just, like, they're a complete sop to try and make it seem more palatable to the people who were being called out.
Sure.
There was an error. She did make an error in the news story, which is that she referred to one company having a division that it no longer had. Like, it was a peripheral throwaway point, and they're like, and that was the only thing that was even vaguely an error.
Sure. So not exactly delete the entire thing and scrub all records.
Well, that wasn't in the one that they deleted.
That was in the amended one, yeah.
Yeah.
But no, like, none of that is enough to merit deletion and wholesale erasure.
No. Actually, what we might do here is drop in Denise's Stuck in My Crawl, which is also related to the company tax rate cut idea and the line that it'll somehow flow through to workers. So here is Denise with what's stuck in her craw.
Hello, Well May We Sayers. It's Denise back with what's stuck in my craw. And one of the things getting to me this week is the idea that when businesses make more money, whether it be tax cuts or cuts to penalty rates, that they'll employ more people, they'll raise wages, and they'll give people more hours. Everything we've seen so far indicates that that's not correct. There have been studies recently to show that the cut up to weekend penalty rates has not increased employment and has not increased the number of hours employers are giving to people. And NAB this week announced the first 1,000 of the 6,000 jobs they'll be cutting over the next 3 years are about to go. This is NAB, who posted a $5.3 billion profit last year. $5.3 billion. Now, they claim that these 6,000 jobs need to go to make a leaner, meaner workplace. That they'll be, well, they probably didn't say leaner, meaner, but a more efficient, more effective, more competitive business. And that they'll be investing money in technology instead. They'll also be creating 2,000 jobs in the IT and technology space. Unfortunately, the 6,000 people that are being retrenched aren't in the IT and technology space. So what are they going to do? That's 6,000 more unemployed people. That's 6,000 people, perhaps without skills, in the workforce looking for work. It's also something like 15% of their workforce that is going to be gone over the next 3 years. Or as the Financial Post pointed out, approximately 1,000 jobs every 6 months just gone. So if a bank which gets a $5.3 billion profit can announce very quickly after that they're going to axe that 6,000 jobs and start laying people off, what hope does anyone have that any corporate tax cuts like the ones that are being proposed right now will actually help the economy? And that is what's stuck in my craw.
So, look, we'll mention briefly that both Dutton and Abbott are all of a sudden calling for lower immigration. So, this is nothing more than the flat-out dog whistle of...
Yeah.
If you hate foreigners, remember, we're happy to pander to you.
Pretty well. I suppose this is just default mode. They get bored like toddlers and just start ranting about immigration again. If they're not focused on anything else, immigrants are always the issue.
It is a good distraction from the way Abbott was using it. What are the two big things that are really hitting people at the moment? Low wages and high housing costs.
Yeah.
And Abbott's like, you know, who's to blame?
Them immigrants. They're the reason that you've got less work, you're not getting paid as much, and your housing costs are more. That's definitely connected, and they're not integrating into the community. And also African gangs. Don't forget African gangs. It's definitely about the infrastructure and housing prices.
I'm glad he keeps reminding me about the African gangs because it is difficult to remember them because they don't exist.
Yeah, that's why we forget about them so readily, is because they are fictional.
Yes, but if we could work out at keeping them in our mind.
Yeah, keep that forefront.
I suppose there are people out there who'll buy that and like, house prices are high, must be the immigrants. Oh yeah, wages are low, must be the immigrants. Like any kind of, we could deport all the immigrants in the country and wages would still be low because it's a factor of the corporate system and the suppression of the unions. It's got nothing to do with immigrants.
Yeah.
And we could, and house prices would, they temporarily fall if we suddenly drop the population, I suppose. But because suddenly there'd be a whole lot of empty houses.
Yeah.
But not for long because the main problem is that the market's full of investment money. It's got nothing to do with...
That's it. If we cleared out a bunch of houses and they were suddenly vacant, those houses would probably have, the first run would probably have a slight dip, but then it would escalate again because there would be people throwing investment money in there again and buying more, and demand would skyrocket on those available houses. So it would not solve any issues.
Which you can tell because the house prices haven't been going up in a line commensurate with the population.
Correlation in that. No, there's no correlation with the housing prices to wages. There's no population correlation. There's nothing like that.
When my house prices last half what they are now, would be like... 3 or 4 or 5 years ago?
It would be something like that.
The population wasn't half what it is now.
No, no. We've gone from 24 million to 27 million or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe. Don't quote me on the numbers.
Doubled.
All
right. So now, the one other thing before talking about the debit card is Matthew Guy's latest idiotic idea, which is that he wants to have photo ID for sex offenders. Mm. So this is the whole idea of that what the sex offender register is for vigilantes to go around and chase them. So I'm sure Darren Hinch will love that because his favourite thing was to send vigilantes out to the wrong houses. the sex offender registry was there specifically so that the police would know where people were to make sure that they, like if there were any more offences, easier to find where they are, and also to make sure they weren't working with children.
Yeah.
Like that's what it's for.
Mm.
This thing, vigilante thing, all that does is it drives people underground and it'll end up making the actual crime prevention aspects much harder to do.
It discourages people from, let's say someone who is on the sex offender register moves, it discourages them from updating that information because people will know who they know what they look like. They run the risk of, let's be fair, I'm not approving or endorsing sex offences, but there is an appropriate response to that, and that is not beating them up on the street, which is a real risk with a circumstance like this where you might...
They're committing an offence if they don't update, but on the other hand, if you're going to get more people who'll be like, yeah, I'm committing offence, but if I do update it, I will be murdered.
Yeah, there's a risk that I will be attacked on the street, which is not... That's not consistent with our idea of justice.
But that's the whole Matthew Guy approach to law and order. It's all just unintended consequences bullshit where you just, something that sounds like making life harder for bad people.
Exactly.
And making it easier for you to find the bad people.
Yeah, that's right. What are you going to do when you find the bad people? Probably commit a crime in its own right. But that's not the point. The point is that you feel like you could, deck yourself out in your best Batman costume and go and punch someone who's done a bad thing.
Hmm.
It doesn't solve anyone's problems. That's technically strictly creating crime in its own right. Yeah, it helps nothing and no one.
Also, like his idiotic plan a couple of weeks back of wanting to add extra, a victim's levy to crimes of any findings of guilt or any type. He wants to add an extra...
I missed this.
We talked about it when it happened, but it wants to add an extra chunk of Effeisance, everything on top of what the court would otherwise impose.
Mm.
And he'll have to spend a whole lot more money recovering money from people who don't have money. That's ultimately a net drain on the taxpayer. But because it sounds like making bad people pay more money, people are like, oh, this is a great idea.
It's the sort of thing that sells in a headline or a talkback radio slot. That's all it is. There's no follow-on thought to the consequence of it.
Oh, if you're an AM talk guy, you would have to love Matthew Guy. So much. He's perfectly pitched at the half-baked, not thinking it through, like whatever idiotic thing we can think of to do to hurt who we think of as the bad people. And, you know, all you have to do is speed to be in the category of a bad person.
Mm.
And they don't believe in rehabilitation.
No, this is all punitive.
Yeah. And which ultimately increases crime. Because you don't actually rehabilitate people when they've committed offences. If your approach is to try to crush them, then they come out unreformed and commit more crime.
Well, imagine a circumstance where someone is found guilty of a crime and has to pay not just the regular court costs, but this extra fee on top of that. I'm going to guess with some confidence, let's say hypothetical where someone's committed a burglary.
Yeah, a property crime.
A property crime, which is, you know, allegedly on the rise due to all these African gangs, but the numbers disagree. But anyway, let's say someone in the circumstance then has to pay.
I think we should stop saying allegedly there. We should just say fictionally.
Let's go. Let's where it is. We'll put it in the fiction section. Someone comes out of that circumstance having to pay more than, you know, yet again more. They're probably not in a position where they had a great deal of income to begin with. They might not have a regular income upon which to base those repayments that they would have to make to pay off that debt. So what's the solution there? Their skill set is in crime. Their skill set is in theft. So
same with all the stuff about that. Stopping or fining people for begging has always been a genius approach.
Mm.
What do you think they're going to do to
get it?
But it's also the classic thing of as you make it easier for employers to track down people's criminal history, you make it harder for people who have criminal histories to get work. What do you want them to do?
Mm. The simultaneous demand that they become
productive, but in a society that won't let them.
Yeah.
So we're coming back in now after a magnificent 20-minute conversation about the cashless debit card. And even some pertinent discussions about how impossible it is going to be for the government to get rid of Barnaby short of losing an election and or gaining more seats and therefore being able to tell Barnaby to get stuffed. But the Nationals probably would never do that because they want to keep the seat. So, yes, there was an exciting conversation. So the debit card.
Yeah, I wish you could have heard it. It was good.
Oh, look.
Full of trenchant insight.
There were some bits with cats meowing in the background, but look, it was still...
I felt the cat made good points, so...
Oh, quality meows. Right, so let's make these points succinctly because we are, in fact, I was like, oh, we're still at 29 minutes. How did we make that? We made it because we did not record for 20 minutes. The silent bits that don't record really shrink a podcast.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way to keep your editing down. It's not record.
It is. Anyway, look, the cashless debit card. So, shitty way of punishing poor people. Okay, so the government is claiming that it will, in some way, improve the lives of the people affected. It's looking at spreading to another site in Western Australia, but not South Australia, because the Nick Xenophon team was only happy to have it happen somewhere else.
Yes, not in my backyard, which I believe is their new slogan.
So the government claims that it was helpful because it reduced, in some places, levels of alcohol use, gambling, and illegal drug use. Now, we had a conversation about how all those things were... But we had a conversation about basically how those things are ways of people... dealing with
managing poverty. What it's like to live with poverty, to live under a subsistence income. You know, people use that. That is a those things are symptoms of poverty. They are not the root causes of.
They're methods that people use to cope.
Yeah.
So, you know, the gambling and drug use and alcohol are all things that minimize pain and, you know, ways of softening or self-medicating in some ways.
Yeah.
Both physical and mental pain, which is a result of, you know, never not knowing when your next food coming in, not having any options, any opportunities.
Yeah,
they may have. They're given this hideous, what's it called? The community development program that the government
yes.
made. So basically, all these people are sent out to forced to do 24 hours of work.
Work-like activity.
Which yeah, so like digging holes and filling them in. Yeah, basically, because there aren't any jobs there. They're not paid a wage. They're just that's to get the below subsistence. What $240 to $250 yeah. a week, Centrelink. Because yeah. there aren't the jobs there to do.
Yeah, you have to make it look like you're doing work to get paid for work that you are not able to get.
At a below minimum wage.
Yeah, that's
like
right.
Just to punish you for being poor, because the whole point of this is that we are blaming you for being poor and finding ways to blame you. The whole system that has led you to be poor, no, it must be your gambling or the things you do to deal with it. And you can tell how insincere that line is and how they've only done it to pick on Aboriginal people because of the fact that there is already prejudice in the community claiming that Aboriginal people are
drunks, drug addicts and gamblers. Like there is a racist presupposition that our Indigenous population, particularly the remote and isolated communities, are riddled with all of these problems that are symptomatic of the Indigenous population more generally, that this is an issue that is far more common in those cases, and therefore the government has taken advantage of that prejudice and that sort of impression that a lot of people have about our Indigenous population, and have reinforced that. So not only are they ignoring the structural issues that disproportionately mean that Indigenous people have lower incomes and shorter life expectancies and all a host of other things, they are now actively promoting racist ideas and racist conceptions of these poor and disadvantaged people.
And if you're like, why is Ginger saying that's racist? What's racist about trying to tackle those things and saying that they're definitely problems in those communities? What's racist about it is that they know, because their own evaluation showed it, that a tiny proportion of the people on these programs were affected by any of those issues. So for them to then come out and say, look, we slightly reduced those problems, it's only in that tiny percentage who were suffering from them in the first place. The vast majority of people on the trial had no problem, didn't have those problems in the first place. So if your metric of success is that it reduced those numbers amongst other people, you did not help those other people at all.
Yeah.
And you've got what their metrics also showed that they didn't publish, they tried to minimise this, and it certainly wasn't in the way that they reported it, was that 49% of participants said it made their lives worse. On average, 1 in 5 reported their children were worse off. And that makes sense because you're given this shameful grey card that you can only use at some places. You can't use it to buy food cheaply at a market.
Yep.
If you're escaping family violence, you can't use it to squirrel money away or use it for accommodation to escape.
Yeah.
Like, the whole program makes life harder for people who are poor. And the government knows that it isn't, that their metric isn't, has it improved their lives? It's, did it reduce those things for that proportion, or does it? Mm. And you're shouting that metric because it's supposed to make sense to us, because we're supposed to assume that that applies to the majority of them.
Exactly.
And that is the racist aspect of it, because it's a lie. It does not apply to the majority of them. And if the government had said that it doesn't apply to the majority of them, then the rest of their line backing it up would make no sense at all.
No. And also, there's no evidence to suggest that that helps people deal with poverty any better, that puts them in a better financial position, helps them to manage their lives better by reducing those factors. It is purely the racist idea that Aboriginal people are drunks and such, that this is profiting off, this is punishing them. And
well,
also
talking profiting off, the people who run the scheme, who are all connected to the Liberal Party.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. Like, because there's infrastructure there. They're making, yeah. There are companies making a lot of money out of this scheme.
Yeah, there are people who, like, enforce these tasks and run these cards and set up the systems for it. There are people making money off this system.
Yeah. So there you are. So this is Tudge justifying it last year. On average, of trial participants surveyed who reported that they do drink alcohol, 25% of participants and 13% of family members reported drinking alcohol less frequently, whilst 25% of participants reported engaging in binge drinking less frequently. Hang on. Of trial participants who reported they do drink alcohol, what was the percentage there, Tudge? Yeah. That's weirdly missing from your press release. Gambling, on average, of trial participants surveyed who reported that they do gamble, what percentage of participants was that, were that, Tudge? 32% reported and 15% said they gambled less. Drug use, so it's the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
And the evaluation states that a significant proportion, 31% of the participants surveyed, said indicated they'd been better able to care for children and save more money. Well, you've left out the 20% who said the children were worse off, and that implies that 69% said they weren't better able. They didn't help. It didn't help them at all.
Yeah, at best,
and 49%
at best
said
it was
worse.
Neutral. Yeah,
it's just and then they use that to justify expanding it. And all it is part of the classic right-wing perspective of we are going to pretend that our privilege is deserved. So your poverty must be deserved. And we will do everything we can to demonize you and make you feel worse about it. And I think the project for us on the left, in terms of the aspect of the podcast that is like, what can we do about this? Mm. Well, first of all, erase the word welfare from our vocabularies. We just need to retort it. It's Social Security. It's a thing that people shouldn't be ashamed of using.
Yeah. There should be no stigma with it. It should be something that is just a part of our lives.
Any one of us could require Social Security at some point. Maybe we lose a job for standing up for our rights. Maybe we lose a job because we're retraining. Maybe we need some time where we're supported to develop a new skill. And in the long run, that we'll all be better off. Like, these Social Security is supposed to be a safety net that protects all of us. It's never going to be better remunerated than a job.
No.
And any job that thinks that they're going to lose people to Centrelink any industry that thinks they're going to lose people if Centrelink was decent, Social Security was decent. Well, that's an industry that's exploiting people and basically relying on them, the threat of starvation. That industry should be shamed into be paying people an amount that is better than subsistence. The idea that we've got people working full-time for subsistence is fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
Centrelink should be subsistence.
Yeah.
If you're working full-time, you should be doing much better than subsistence.
Absolutely. That the minimum wage should reflect, not comfortable in the sense of living like lavish lifestyle with a multi-bedroom house, but like enough to live comfortably.
Why should anyone in this country who is working 35, 40 hours a week be struggling to put food on the table?
Why should anyone living in this country be struggling to put food on the table? Be worried about
that should be basically for Social Security. Why should anyone who's working 40 hours a week be unable to afford holidays and be unable to if you're working, you're contributing. Why the hell are you not doing much better than anything that Social Security would ever be? I mean, well, Social Security is supposed to be, that if you lose your job, you're not homeless.
Yeah, and it's also to balance out the systematic, disenfranchisement and issues that plague people like the Indigenous population where there are all those obstacles. That's what Social Security should be doing. But if all Social Security is doing, Centrelink benefits are offering you this lower than the poverty line income, if that's still more appealing than working, then there is a failure somewhere along the line, and that failure is probably somewhere along the company tax cut line, where the money is not flowing down from the top. Yeah. It doesn't flow down to the people who do the work.
And if you're a single parent, you shouldn't be being forced to rely on whether or not the child support agency can chase money from some random parent, which they may or may not be able to do. You should have a decent... You're working raising a child.
That is a job. You are contributing to society by raising a child.
You should have a pension that is decent. Mm-hmm. And rather than chasing child support from father, we should be taxing people well enough that we can support a proper, rather than having this two-tiered system of whether or not the CSA can actually grab money for people. Like, these are all things that should be part of our safety net. Nobody should be facing poverty because they're raising a child. Nobody should be facing becoming homeless because they lose a job. And if you're a business and you're afraid that your workers will find it easier to live on a subsistence payment and sit around the house just surviving because you're not paying them very well, then that's on you.
Yeah.
That's a reflection of, All right. One last thing. I just want to flag that there was a situation where we saw this week that the government is terrified of letting the courts have anything to do with overseeing what they do on Nauru, which is that a teenager who was who's basically suicidal and in severe danger of harm, Judge Murphy, the federal court, has ordered that she be brought to psychiatric facilities, which don't exist on Nauru. So she's back here now in Australia. But obviously the government and Nauru, they obviously fought that as far as they could. And if they had been able to somehow keep her out of the reach of Australian courts so that they didn't have the ability to protect her basic rights,
they would have done.
Yeah.
They would have very much liked to. As we see quite a lot, and it's not the first time where a real severe medical need has arisen in one of our nightmare ocean gulags. These things arise with stunning frequency, and we protest and we demand, but our government does nothing. We have pregnant refugees who are in dire risk of themselves and their child dying in the act of birth, who get left and stranded on this island.
We still have the one who desperately needs treatment, is at high and imminent risk of heart attack or sudden death, but they won't let her minor son come with her, so she won't leave.
Yeah,
but so somebody's going to die because we're just going to. Our attitude is no, your minor son has to be abandoned and left behind in this hellhole. What a country. And remember, I suppose those of us who got the most power to do something about that this week would be those voting in Batman. And vote against the Labour candidate and vote for the Greens candidate because the Labour Party, even though their candidate apparently is like, oh, look, I don't really agree with the party on the refugees. As in, she can see the Greens are right,
yeah.
But she can't do anything about it because that's the Labour Party policy. She's like, yeah, but I'd be somebody on the inside.
Yeah,
you'd just be one more vote for this shit. I know. Yeah. That's what all of your left members of the ALP do. They acknowledge that it's wrong, but then they vote for it anyway. So screw you. I don't want you as a representative. The one other thing I actually forgot to mention in relation to Social Security is that one of the things other than supporting the idea of Social Security, which I think all of us need to get a lot louder about and a lot less ashamed of, is to point out that the ALP voted with the Liberals this week against a motion to increase it by $75 a week.
Oh, yes, of course. What a dire and ridiculous that thing would be to put it still probably, I would imagine, below the poverty line, but to give the people who need that support like $75 on that kind of income, that's a fantastic amount of money. That's so valuable.
But in the last few years, rents, for example.
It's not enough. No, I want to be clear that it is not a sufficient increase. But if you think that you're living on, I do not know the numbers, but let's say it's $240 a week and you increase that by $75 a week, that's fantastic. That is so much more freedom. That's a little bit more money you could put on your travel card, a little bit more money that you could spend on groceries.
Or you could afford rent.
Or you could afford rent. Or you could do all of those things that take that little bit of strain off.
So the current new study set at $489.70 per fortnight for a single adult with no children. So that's $245 a week.
Yeah.
Now you can also get some rent assistance on top of that, but it's not very much. But so you're starting at $245 a week. This crappy three-bedroom, because we've got a child, house in Mitcham is, $450 a week rent that they're about to jack up.
Yep.
Like, double.
Yeah, you couldn't afford my two-bedroom place in Kovo.
Let alone food. That.
No, yeah, that's right. This is before you think about all of the other things, the various other bills that come with, owning or living in a house. Owning a house, what a lunatic idea that is. Yeah, food, the many things that come with, being a human living in the world. Housing is not...
I don't understand how anybody on New South is living at all.
No, I don't. They're definitely not living well or happily or comfortably.
What's that? You're paying rent. And if you do get, the landlords don't want to let people on New South. Like, if you apply for accommodation, if you apply for a house, a lease, when you're on New South, they won't let you in.
I would not be surprised, no.
Unless they can charge you more.
Yeah.
So I reckon we as lefties need to fight that pretty hard. All right, Ginger, thank you so much for doing this podcast. I'm very sorry that we've done the last 15 minutes twice.
Bit of deja vu. It's fine. I've been there before.
Oh, it was so good. Such a good discussion. And the abridged version. I just wish you could have been there.
That's right. You'll have to imagine.
Well, I mean, I assume that somebody has got some kind of sneak in the house and has I mean, I assume that's somewhere.
That's right. We can see if DFAT or ASIO have got the audio recording from your laptop.
We can't expect them to wait until I upload the conversations. Like, I've got it anyway. Ginger, where can people find you in the meantime?
On the internet in various forms. On Twitter at GingerBFG. And you can hear my podcast, which is called Common Sense with Bert Franklap, a satirical take on talkback radio done entirely by me. You can find that on Apple Podcasts or anywhere.
I don't know if the Matthew Guy stuff got cut.
Oh, Matthew Guy, yeah.
Well, you could certainly do some AM stuff about that. I think that did get cut at the end.
Matthew Guy, my show is lightly fictionalized, but I could not come up with a more boring and generic name for a politician than Matthew Guy, nor can I come up with the sort of talkback friendly, Daily Telegraph headline sized bites of primal brain thought that fall out of his mouth on a regular basis.
In place of thought through policy. And I like the way that pretty much everything he proposes would have the opposite effect.
Yeah. But like we were saying, punitive is the watchword, it is the solution of all things. Poor people are their own worst enemies. Systematic oppression and racial profiling and a number of other things that contribute to their inability to earn and get into the same positions as everyone else is clearly their own fault. And so we must punish them, and the people who are guilty of crimes also should be punished further and driven to more crime and so on and so forth.
If we keep punishing other people who aren't us, then maybe people will stop looking at the fact that we are fleecing them.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, I feel like we can see them, but I just don't know that we've got a very good strategy at this point for bringing them down.
No.
Anyway, I suspect that if you're hoping for that from a 45-minute podcast this week, give us another 2 or 3 episodes, and we'll have a better approach.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Work it out.
How to tear it all down. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you to, me for editing. Thank you to Robin Gray for the music, Alex Lund for the artwork. Thank you to everybody who has given us a positive review on iTunes. Thank you most of all to our Patreon subscribers. We are going to start looking at trying to get some Patreon rewards going. And we're trying to... If you have any specific sort of things that you would like to hear and you are a Patreon subscriber, please do message us through that. wellmaywesaypodcast@gmail.com. Also, we put a comment at the end of the blog post on wellmaywesay.com. Otherwise, thank you. We'll see you all next week.
Farewell.
Thank you.